This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. This is episode 281. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals from the USA Today family of sites. My co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And unfortunately, this show is another one where it's not completely doom and gloom. However, the Cardinals lost convincingly to the Carolina Panthers 31-21 on Sunday, falling to 2-2 on the season, and kind of all that excitement that we had for the first 2 weeks of the year have now turned into fear that they're a terrible team. Isn't that kind of how it feels right now, Seth?
Yeah, you're worried that week one was the fluke and everything else has kind of been the warning signs. And so we'll see this week. They'll go up against a team that seems like they are actively trying to get their coach fired. So, you know, obviously things may change and we'll judge it off of that and we'll get to that later. But this is going to be a telling week about how they respond, what they look like, kind of the organizational philosophy and where they're at. Because, you know, after the first 2 weeks, it was like, okay, maybe this is a playoff team, a team that can compete for, you know, late into the season for a division title in the best decision in the NFL. And now it's like, are they going to win another game?
Right. We've definitely experienced, and let's be honest, it's, for the Cardinals fans who remember the 2012 season, 4-0, and then 1-12, the 1-11 the rest of the way. It was a much different scenario. They had different types of injuries. They didn't have a promising young quarterback in Kyler Murray, but we've seen it before. The excitement fades quickly into panic. But anyway, in this edition of the show, we're going to talk about our initial reactions to what went wrong in that game. We can pick a number of things. We're going to talk about the safety position in particular and the roster moves that were made. And if there's any hope, and we'll talk about Isaiah Simmons as well. We'll talk about what happened to the offense, as well as we'll get into if we're actually legitimately worried about the direction of the Cardinals right now, and then preview their Week 5 matchup against New York Jets team that is a hotter dumpster fire than the Cardinals are at this moment, and we'll look into that. So let's go ahead and get started. Initial reactions. What your biggest takeaway as to the negative side or what went wrong in Sunday's game? What was that for you, Seth?
I mean, when you look at the entirety of the game, I think it's easier to say what went right. And that was, it didn't seem like we had any major injuries coming out of the game. Justin Pugh seemed to be fine, and who else left the game?
Kenyon Drake. And that didn't look serious. I mean, some people, from what we saw, it just looked like he got hit hard. He was going to the ground, he got turned around, and then he didn't have time to brace for the guy that was coming up behind him, but he got turned around, so he got hit right in the midsection, right in the chest.
The only thing you worried about was a potential concussion there. And so, you know, for Pugh and Drake to be healthy, I mean, that's about the extent of what I would say was, you know, the positives coming out of it. And so what went wrong then, it just breaks down into, well, everything else. Offensively, there's a lot of questions at this point. You know, people harp on the short passing game, and you know, that you and I'll kind of break that down in a couple minutes. But the reality became that early in the game, they took, what, 4 or 5 deep shots. Andy Isabella stumbled on one. Kyler missed Fitz wide open on one. He threw DeAndre out of bounds on one. There were just but on each of those plays, if you go back and look, Kyler takes a shot, and all of a sudden that, I don't know if it was Kyler, I don't know if it's Cliff, I don't know if it's a combination of the two. They decided, like, hey, we're going to try to work the short stuff, get the ball out quick. You know, obviously we're struggling to block, and, well, that just didn't work. You know, the run game was non-existent, and so then all of a sudden you're just throwing basically laterals and gaining 2 or 3 yards, and then setting yourself up for, you know, third down and medium to long, and you can't even complete those. You know, you look at the defensive side of the ball, and it was just like you were willing to work with the ideas that the safeties would be an issue, knowing that Jalen Thompson's still on IR, Buda Baker just had surgery, Chris Banjo's out with an injury. I think the concern became that everything else didn't work either. And the Panthers' offense looked like what we have expected the Cardinals' offense to look like. I mean, ripping off big runs, Teddy Bridgewater, you know, going to different options throughout the game, you know, utilizing quick throws, deep throws, like just all of that. And when it all is said and done, you look at it and you go, there's really no positives outside of health that came out of this game for the Arizona Cardinals.
Right. For me, the biggest take, well, the one thing I noticed the most was just the falling apart defensively of every metric that they had. Now, the safety issues aside, what the Cardinals had been doing, and even in the game against the Lions when they ended up losing, the overall metrics that you like to see, the yards allowed were low, the red zone percentage was good, and third down and pressure, they were getting sacks. They sacked Matthew Stafford 4 times. They did not do good. They didn't do well in any of those metrics. They had, what, just a couple of quarterback hits. Chandler Jones was non-existent again, just one hit. The Cardinals don't keep, like they did under Bruce Arians, they don't keep the same stats in terms of hurries as they used to for the coaches' film. So I don't have that numbers, but they got no sacks. They were bad. They let the Panthers roll and keep going and extending drives on third down. They were ineffective defensively in the red zone. And so those three, basically what it comes down to defensively, you can allow yards if you are good in three areas. If you can get to the quarterback, if you can get off the field on third down, and if you can limit touchdowns in the red zone. And the Cardinals had done those for 3 weeks. They were atrocious at every single one of those metrics against the Panthers. And then that was compounded by the fact, and I think I felt Devon Kennard's absence was more understated, was less appreciated than got mentioned, because especially up front, he is I've been bullish on his production for the year. He is perfectly built for that 3-4 edge player. The drop, he's strong against the run. He's a strong player. He's technically sound. And then you go with someone, Hassan Reddick, who's had some flashes, but the one concern we've always had about Hassan on moving him to the edge is that he is not big enough to play full-time, because he's going to get completely eaten up in the run game, and that's kind of what happened. So you lose the strength of Kennard on that side of the defensive line and on that side of the field up front. And then you compound the fact that you've got inexperience in the safety position, in particular Curtis Riley, who is not community, who's making mistake after mistake. I thought Deontay Thompson played fine. I saw a lot of the same type of physicality that Buda Baker brings without quite the game speed. Buda Baker is a bullet on that field. He erases a lot of problems, and we knew that Deontay couldn't erase things. DT was unable to erase those, but he played physically. He made tackles. He was better tackling than we've seen. But it was obvious downgrade from Buddha. It's just, for me, it was the complete failure of everything that they had done well on defense. And I understand the safety, and I think Devon Kennard's absence was there. Now, offensively, yeah, I can't tell at this point, and I was going to ask Cliff this yesterday on Monday when he spoke to the media, but already a couple of guys had asked kind of the same question. I wanted to know how much, like, if we had to balance it, how much of what those short passes were the result of play calling, and how much it was read that Kyler did, where he was looking quickly for something else. And because if I recall, there weren't a ton of things that were dropped back immediately to the side. It was, I don't see anything immediately open yet, so I'm going to my check down over here. I wanted to know how much was that, because that might be, especially you commenting about the observation you made about the shots he took early on. Kyler doesn't like to get hit. That's one thing we know. I'm not going to question his toughness, but he's not Carson Palmer. He's not these other quarterbacks that when he gets hit, he's gonna stand up and he's gonna take it some more. He's going to find ways to avoid that contact. He doesn't like it at all. And I wonder how much of that was simply him not trusting initial reads and say, I'm gonna get rid of the ball, because he did take a few wallops in the first half.
Yeah, and it's, you know, that's just it's gonna be something he has to grow into and be comfortable, you know, or get used to, unfortunately. And I mean, like you said, no quarterback likes to get hit. And you see now more than ever these guys that traditionally haven't been hit much, you know, the Murrays, the Lamar Jacksons. That's what the key is for defenses, is to get into them and hit them early and often, and then, you know, hope and knowing that that'll rattle them. But, you know, Murray's got to be able to shake that off. But at the same time, I mean, when you look at it, and you know, we can just break down the offense at this point and just say, look, on Sunday, they could not block. I mean, it was really bad. It was probably the worst performance we've had from this offensive line group under Cliff Kingsbury and Sean Coogler. Like, it was legitimately bad this week. And when you look at it from that perspective, it does make sense of why you saw, yeah, this was, I mean, just on Pro Football Focus, and you don't have to, you know, love Pro Football Focus, but just from their grades, this was by far the worst pass blocking game of the season. And this was also their second lowest run blocking grade of the season. And that makes sense. I mean, when you look at it from that perspective, they just didn't do a good job up front. And don't get me wrong, I mean, the Panthers have a nice front four with Brian Burns, Derek Brown, Kawan Short, and Yeter Gross-Matos. But in the end, that's not even close to the San Francisco or Washington defensive lines. They're good, don't get me wrong, but they're not those other guys. And so the only difference was that Max Williams wasn't available. And I mean, Max Williams is really good, especially as a blocking tight end. So I don't want this to come out the wrong way, but you can't tell me that's the difference in this team being able to run block and then set up the passing game, is just Max Williams being out. And that made a huge difference. I do want to say, and I don't know anything. There's no insight in this. This is just me speculating. I do wonder if the ankle injury was bothering DeAndre Hopkins a little more than we were let on, because it did seem like they tried to shy away from him running much past about 10 yards. I don't know if you noticed that or picked that up either, but
it was something. In fact, with both DeAndre and Christian, I mean, they played, but both were coming off injuries, and Christian, we knew, wasn't 100%, and DeAndre didn't practice all week, which means, hey, he clearly wasn't right, but as tough as he is, I'm sure that had something to do with part of the game plan.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, that's, I think that the combination of it, it led to a bad game. I mean, it was the game plan to be more horizontal and try to get out, but I mean, the offensive linemen could not pass protect, they could not get out on screens and get blocks. I mean, this, when I say this was the worst performance by the offensive line in the Cliff Kingsbury era, I'm not exaggerating. I mean, this performance was awful, and it's, you know, it does become a bit concerning that they had this bad of a performance after they, you know, had started to kind of build back up since the San Francisco game, where they played well, you know, and then they play well against the Washington football team. And then they even have a good game against the Detroit Lions. And then to stumble like this is just, it's concerning when you have all the other issues going on offense with, you know, nagging injuries for the wide receiver corps. You're not creating big running lanes for the running backs, and Kenyon Drake, who does look a little David Johnson-esque right now in terms of being a little bulkier and a little slower to and through the hole. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to fall on Cliff and Kyler to get it right, and it doesn't seem like they're getting it right.
Coming on next on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the safety position. Isaiah Simmons, what are the options moving forward? That's coming on next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The safety position was a major issue last weekend against the Panthers, as we've noted. They were playing with their fourth and their fifth safety in Deontay Thompson and Curtis Riley. We saw Charles Washington. He played two snaps on defense in week one, but those were the first two defensive snaps he had played since 2017, and he played 32. And Washington looked like the best safety out there. There was talk of potentially getting Isaiah Simmons some look at safety. We saw a couple of plays that were blown dead, so they never actually happened, where he was at linebacker and then before the snap would run back to the deep safety position. And there was a false start in both those cases. So, you know, mission accomplished in doing something positive. But then he'd come out. So we didn't really see him doing much in terms of safety work. What was the problem? And is there any hope for the position as we move forward?
I think right now the biggest hope for the position is health. You know, we've talked about this, that they were always playing really kind of fast and loose with that safety position, just relying basically on three young guys. I mean, Buddha is in his fourth season and he's, you know, he's a Pro Bowl player, but at the same time, he's a bit smaller, undersized, if you will. And then Jalen Thompson and Deontay Thompson are fifth round picks. And that's not, you know, to belittle their skill set by any means. It just was a ballsy, different way to go about it. And then you basically had two special teams guys who you're like, hey, if they have to play, we're okay with it, especially Chris Banjo. And, I mean, it literally was, what, snap two of the season? And you found yourself in that position.
Right, yes. And so Jalen Thompson gets hurt.
Yeah, and so it's like, two plays into the season, it's like, oh, well, maybe that wasn't the best idea we've had. But at that point, it's too late. I mean, you're kind of already sold out on this whole idea. And then, you know, Chris Banjo gets nicked up and Buda Baker gets nicked up. And, you know, you're going to go down with the ship at that point. And it's, I mean, it's a decision you make based on the players you have. And I don't think there was any safeties that you and I are going, I can't believe they didn't keep them. But I do think you and I both agreed we were kind of, I don't want to say shocked, but we were surprised by their lack of bringing in a veteran option, even into camp. Bring in somebody with experience. I mean, bringing in TJ Ward during training camp would have made more sense than bringing in TJ Ward to be on the practice squad to hopefully get, you know, well-versed in the defense to come in and maybe play in week six. But, you know, at the same time, it's hindsight's 2020, and that it is what it is. Like I said, I think the biggest surprise right now is that they haven't either publicly or internally looked at moving Isaiah Simmons there, at least into that strong safety role a little bit, to give him, you know, on the field, and then hopefully lessen the blow of the two losses in Buda and Jalen.
Right. And then that ultimately it comes down to this. I think, look, Curtis Riley was released on Tuesday. We're recording this Tuesday night as we normally do. So while that looks like a scapegoat move, it actually feels like, to me, the signal of having one of those, at least one of the safeties, come back, whether that's Jalen, who has already missed 3 weeks. He's eligible to come off of injured reserve this week. And with the type of ankle, like, they never said what the ankle injury is, but if I went back and looked at that play, his foot did go under him a little oddly, but it wasn't an ankle roll. So I'm guessing it wasn't a high ankle sprain. And if that is the case, then he should, you know, the high ankle, a 3 week absence is kind of what we've seen, at least historically, with the Cardinals. Chris Banjo's, his hamstring, that could be fine. Buda's hand, the hope was he was only with one game, but I think that was on the highly optimistic side. But getting at least one of those players back, especially if it's JT, I think Riley being released signals that that's probably one or more of those guys are coming back. And so maybe the point was moot. The point was they didn't want to, this is the argument. I'm hearing this from a lot of people. They should have put Isaiah Simmons back at safety. But the more I think about it is if it was only going to be a 1 week deal, I kind of get that it makes sense not to teach him a whole bunch of new terminology and to do some safety things from the linebacker perspective and the linebacker concept, especially if there was only going to be one game. Because once you start getting people back, you guess what's not going to happen? Because Buda and Jalen, they're going to play just like at that linebacker. So I'm not convinced it was the right move to move him back at safety to play last week necessarily. I think a lot of people would have loved to see him start, because obviously, yeah, who could have been worse than Curtis Riley? I hope Isaiah wouldn't be worse. But in terms of miscommunications, it could have been just as bad. And it would, honestly, if Isaiah goes out there and has a Curtis Riley type performance, we're really, really questioning that draft pick.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's what the question becomes. Is this an internal decision of like, look, he can't do it? Or is this a, look, he hasn't had enough practice, and if he goes out there and flails, it looks even worse. So, you know, I'm fine with it. I just in general would like to see him on the field a little bit more and figuring out where his reps are coming from. So I guess we'll...
And that's the thing that's going to be hard. You almost have to secretly hope for a minor injury to Devondre Campbell, who's been pretty solid, to give Isaiah some more playing time, to kind of force the issue to put him out there. Because I don't think, because otherwise it's going to be a case of, I think all year, it's going to be a case of where they're trying to, he started every game. So it's kind of like creating a position for him instead of putting in the position they want him in.
Yeah, and that's the hard part is, you know, and this is what we talked about when they drafted him, and this was always the question of this draft pick, and it's never been about Isaiah Simmons' ability to play football. It's always been about, do the Cardinals have the right minds to get the most out of him and get someone in terms of that's willing to allow him to be himself and play, you know, kind of all over the field. And right now the unfortunate answer is no, they don't. And it's, you know, we'll see how that plays out and if that changes as the season goes along. But, you know, as of right now, it's just not something that they're comfortable with, and you can't, I shouldn't say they, that that Vance is comfortable with, and so that's, I mean, you can't really do anything about that, unfortunately.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to come back and talk about the problems on offense. We've addressed a little bit. We're going to talk more about the offensive side of the ball. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about what happened to the offense. We've already talked about a little bit of that. It was interesting because in terms of sacks, the only sack was the strip sack, and technically Kyler wasn't sacked. His arm was hit and the ball came out, and it was close to being an actual pass. But there was a lot of things, like you mentioned already. The blocking was bad. They were manhandled. And one player in particular, Mason Cole, after seeing Lamont Gilliard for the last two and a half weeks, really hold his own. I saw it on my Twitter feed. We heard it in I think our group text. Mason Cole took a little heat, and he did not have a good game overall. I mean, he did have to go against, you know, Derek Brown, who is one very physical, strong player. But I don't know what percent health Mason Cole was at, but it does raise a little question as who's the best option at the center. And I know they love Mason Cole, but I think Lamont Gilliard might really have given them pause as to what they're thinking about moving forward.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, that's where the question comes in is, you know, what are they looking at and what are they seeing? And so, I mean, Cole wasn't good, and it hurts that it coincides with the worst the offensive line's played all season. You know, you look at J.R. Sweezy, he's been a bit of a letdown this season, and he probably had what was his best game this week. That's the scariest part. And you know, he's a guy that I don't know how to explain it other than say, you know what you're going to get with him. Like, you know that he's a low end starter, and every team has those. I mean, there's very rarely teams that have all, you know, high end starters on offensive line. And even if they do, it's usually at best for a season. And so, you know, I think you look back at it and you wonder if you can just chalk it up to a bad day for these guys. You know, was it a bad game for, you know, Mason Cole? Was it a bad game for Justin Pugh? You know, we didn't really talk about him yet, but Kelvin Beachum was just awful this week. And he's actually had, you know, a pretty solid season, and he had what was without a doubt his worst game of the season. And it's interesting because he's blocked Chase Young. He blocked Nick Bosa a little bit. And he just had no chance against Brian Burns. I mean, and don't get me wrong, Brian Burns is very good. I mean, he would 100% be a starter on the Arizona Cardinals defense right now opposite Chandler Jones. But he's not even close to those guys' class. And so for Beachum to go from being a guy that's, you know, doing a really nice job, that's not giving up pressures and you know, not having penalties, to coming in and really struggling in this game, it was unfortunate. But like you said, like, you can go down the list. I mean, this was literally everybody's worst game, except for maybe J.R. Sweezy. and so that's just kind of the ironic thing of it. The other thing with the offense this week, and, you know, I've watched it again, and I don't know exactly how, you know, what to think of it, but Andy Isabella and Christian Kirk had at best what you can call bad days at the office. Kirk coming off the injury, Isabella coming off, you know, what we were hoping was a breakout game. And in the very first part of the game, they run a wheel route and Kyler throws a deep shot, and it just should have been caught flat out. And Andy went to look up and tripped and stumbled and then couldn't reach it. And it still went through his hands just a touch. And those things happen. I mean, it definitely happens, but it kind of set the wrong tone for the game overall. Cause you felt like after the bad first series where Kyler missed an open guy and Larry Fitzgerald over the middle, that, you know, then the defense basically gets walked over. and then you're thinking to yourself, okay, we need to come out and score. And then to miss that shot, it felt deflating because then the defense still couldn't get stops. And so that's just really the hard part is when you're struggling and especially, you know, when you're falling behind and then you're going into pass rush mode or pass protect mode and then you can't pass protect, it just makes life difficult. And that's what I think people don't get. And that's why my tweet about the game flow at that point, Cliff panicked, and that's on Cliff as the coach. I mean, you don't just abandon the run because you're down two scores early in the first quarter. And I felt like that's what they did. And they were running the ball well at that point. They were averaging over 5 yards a carry. And that's what, you know, that's what happened.
Yeah, I felt that. I was just thinking just now, in fact, the road aspect. Now, the players and Cliff, they've all alluded to, especially the players, have alluded to focus during the week. So maybe the whole road thing, even the East Coast thing, the early time start, I don't like that as an excuse because the Cardinals practice at 8 in the morning. So their bodies are used to doing that. But if we go back to the season opener when they're on the road in Santa Clara, I'll tell you, is if we think about it, if it isn't for that punt block, it felt the same way as the Panthers did, as the Panthers game did. Only the Panthers game just continued to go poorly because, well, they struggled on offense early. They didn't do anything defensively, but they got a big play from special teams to get things on track. I tweeted something at the beginning of the game. Murray seems to be like, I've seen him be a little erratic in games over the last year plus. But once he hits a throw, or, and it's not, once he gets a couple of good throws in or a couple of nice plays, it locks him in. And against Carolina, he didn't lock in. So he hits on that play with Isabella, the confidence goes up, and then he started attacking other ways. And once against the Lions, you know, we're talking last year in the debut, when did things start locking in? Once they hit that play with Fitzgerald down the field, then things started really kind of humming. He needs, in many ways, he's like a rhythm quarterback or a momentum quarterback. He can turn things around in a hurry, but you will see a little erratic out of him until he hits something, and then boom, everything is locked in. And that never happened. I'm a little concerned about the running game. It feels like Kenyon's doing a lot of the same things without the same results. Now, I will say that the Cardinals struggled to run the ball early last season, and they aren't, at least this time, bailing on the running game as often as they had, in part because in weeks one and week two they were ahead, and so they were able to continue to run the ball. But the 11 carries or the 13 carries for Kenyon Drake, you want to see a little bit more. And you're just not seeing the explosive plays yet. He'll do a couple, but the Panthers really, really did a good job of bottling up the run game. And like you already talked about, the blocking was bad. Kyler was looking for the short pass. Cliff changed, or I guess, you know, Cliff talks about needing to, you know, do a better job of play calling. I think you hit it on the head. He kind of panicked and tried to get things going. I think he tried to find a way to get Kyler back in rhythm and never got it. And it was just a recipe for disaster. And they couldn't, they looked as bad offensively as they have in a while. And we're hoping that's just the hiccup. And if this is the hiccup, it's fine, because Carolina does have they are learning a new defense, but they have a smart defensive mind in Matt Rhule. And that's kind of the thing that I hope we'll see next week, this coming weekend, because the Jets are bad. And if they can get back in rhythm, then I'm not going to worry so much. But you go from being not quite in rhythm, you got things going the first couple of weeks, things were The offense had issues in week three, and then week four was a disaster. You want to see it get back on track.
Yeah, and it needs to, because that's the whole thing is, and this is one of the things we talked about in the offseason with the entire team building process I don't think Isaiah Simmons is bad, so I don't want it to come off this way. But you and I talked a lot about the fact that this team was average on offense. And that was – and the only real change they made – and this isn't a shot at Kelvin Beachum, but the only real change they made was that they got DeAndre Hopkins. Now, that was great, so I don't want anybody to take that the wrong way. But – our concern remained, did they have a guy next to him? And everybody wants to talk about Christian Kirk and, you know, and Larry Fitzgerald and this and that. But the reality becomes, Kirk's never shown an ability to be a number two. I mean, never. A lot of it's health, but there's never been a consistency of him being the number two. And then the other, you know, part of that is it's unrealistic to continue to expect Larry Fitzgerald to produce at a level of a number two or even number three at his age. So that was one of the things when we talked about the building of a team, was taking a linebacker the best use of the building blocks for a team. When you look at team construction, where does linebacker fall in terms of like how you're building that team? And so, you know, that's still going to be a question, because you are seeing that they lack talent on the offensive side of the ball still, even though they've invested in Christian Kirk and Andy Isabella, Keyshawn Johnson, you know, all of these guys, they've invested that. And so, but the reality is none of them have shown that they can be an alpha, and that was why they needed a DeAndre Hopkins, but they're still not there yet.
Coming next on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Are we worried about the direction of the Cardinals? That's coming up next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The question now becomes, after kind of the full gamut of emotions that we've experienced the last 4 weeks of the season of, hey, could they be after week one? Could they go 5-0 to 2-0? Could they go 5-0 to, okay, they still should be 4-1 going into Dallas to, oh, crap. Is this team bad? Have you kind of changed your expectations? For me, I'm not worried yet in my expectations for this team entering the year. I thought they were a 7-9 win team. I think I predicted 9 wins. I could see 7 being kind of their floor. And if everything goes well, you know, the way things were looking at the beginning of the year, you know, they could be a division contender. But we always kind of felt that kind of the expectations were going to be they were going to be a team that competed for one of those 3 wild card spots. Now, the way they played against Carolina is reason to give pause. I'm not worried yet. 2-2 isn't bad. 2-2 after starting 2-0 is disappointing, but they are still in control of things. They've got a bad Jets team coming up. They got a Dallas Cowboys team that is, oh my gosh, terrible on defense. And so things can get back on track, and then we'll see the kind of what sort of metal they're made of. I'm not worried yet. I just have more, like, my overconfidence and my over positivity and over optimism of the beginning of this season has come back down to, okay, let's see what they've got.
Yeah, and that's where you're at this point. I mean, honestly, and it's easy to say this, but the game against the Jets will basically tell a story of who this team is moving forward. If they lose to the Jets, this is not a team that's, I mean, and this is going to sound harsh, but it's true. This isn't a team that's worth taking seriously at that point.
and I will say this. I do expect the Jets, like every team, I always worry about playing winless teams because bad teams win games too. We saw the Cardinals win 3 in 2018. I don't know how in the world they won 3 games that season. But I do worry about, because especially when a bad team has a little momentum early, that they can ride that. If they come out and can just kind of what they did to Washington, just move down the field, get a stop, get a score, that pretty much should be it. But yeah, it doesn't even have to be a convincing win. As long as they finish strong against a bad team, that's where I'm going to be, okay, they're on the right track.
Yeah, and I think that's the way you look at it. I mean, if they win this game, even in a bad win, it's a win. And this is, let's be honest right now, the last 2 games, they're a bad team. I'm not saying that they're a bad team overall, but as of the last 2 games, they're a bad team. The first 2 games, they're a good team. So at this point, they're what, average? I guess that balances out. You would probably weigh the Carolina loss heavier than you would weigh the win over the San Francisco 49ers at this point. But they're they're not a good team. And so just winning on the road at all is difficult. And so if you go on the road and win, I don't think you can say, oh, well, it doesn't matter. It's the Jets. Well, no, it doesn't matter. This is, this isn't a team that is the Seahawks. They're not, the Chiefs. I mean, heck, they're not even the Rams at this point, right? So they have to go and win before you can say, oh, well, this is, this team's doing this or that. So I don't think we're at the point where you give up on this team, but I do think we're getting to the point where you begin to wonder if the right people are in place to make this team go. And that doesn't mean the head coach or the quarterback or, you know, that doesn't even mean the defensive coordinator. It just means, like, is everybody in the right spot to make this thing work? Are the choices being made and how it's coming out, you know, gelling together well? And at this point, I would say the answer is not really, but it doesn't mean that you're giving up on the team. It doesn't mean that you can, I mean, it's still been only 20 games in the Cliff Kingsbury era. So I'm not ready to abandon hope yet, but it is getting to the point where you'd like to see significantly higher returns.
And for me, I want this team to be a team people can be excited about. You're always going to have some level of interest, but when they play poorly against weak teams or perceived weak teams, it takes the wind out of any sail. So any game that they play well on, that builds excitement, even if they're against bad teams, because beating bad teams in convincing fashion is exciting. You're like, yeah, we're good. Playing poorly, even playing competitively against great to good teams will build excitement. We've seen that here. But what happens is inconsistent play is what kills buzz. If they're up and down, it becomes hard for the fans to follow. And I want this to, because I, you know, we're fans. I've been a Cardinals fan since 1989, since then I started actually following the Cardinals. And so I want this team to be exciting, because it's so much more fun as a fan to follow a team that's exciting. Let's take the Phoenix Suns. Oh my gosh, they've been no fun to follow up, except for the bubble. But before that, they really weren't that exciting to follow at all for years. And I just want this team to be exciting to watch. Obviously, I want them to win. But if you go from an improving team that had some excitement late in the year to inconsistent and not exciting, you're going in the wrong direction.
Correct. And that's what you're kind of looking at this point, is where are you in terms of the direction of the organization? And I think, you know, we talked about it at 2-0, you begin to change your expectations, and maybe our overreaction to their beginning of the season start is playing tricks on our expectation level for this team. And so, you know, we talked about it changed from being, hey, this team is good, they're going to be competing to, you know, win 7 to 9 games, to, man, this could be a 10, 12 win team. And maybe that was just too much of an overreaction in the positive light, because it is week to week. I mean, they are just 2-2 at this point, which, you know, we were hoping they'd be 3-1, but push come to shove, they're on pace for about what we expected, 8-8, 9-7. So it's not like they're behind schedule and they're no longer ahead of schedule. They're just on schedule. And so I think when you have that, when you have an average team, you have those peaks and valleys, and they tend to average out over the course of a season. And I think, at least I hope, we're just in one of those valleys, and the peak will begin to rise up shortly.
Cono next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on. Let's preview the game against the Jets. What is there to know? Who are they going to play? What do the Jets do well, and what don't they do well? That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. And the Cardinals play a winless New York Jets team. A team that has been a mess. A team that wanted Cliff Kingsbury and a team whose coach the Cardinals had interest in. Imagine if the Cardinals had Adam Gase as their head coach.
And I can guarantee you this podcast would not be happening.
Oh, Adam Gase as coach with Josh Rosen, because they would have drafted Kyler Murray. It would have been Josh Rosen and an injured Nick Bosa and Adam Gase. And they definitely wouldn't have traded for Kenyon Drake, because Adam Gase didn't trust Kenyon Drake when he was in Miami. So, so goodness. Therefore, what is there with this Jets team? Is there anything that they do well right now?
I mean, they weren't terrible on Thursday Night Football. They're coming off 10 days and what was clearly their best performance of the season. You know, you look at the Jets in general, and they are, you know, a bad team. I mean, nobody's going to argue that they're probably the worst team in football at this point. Their offense is just
five touchdowns in four games by the offense.
And what weren't most of them last week?
Yes. They only have six tips of the season, and one of them was paired to Sears pick six. So, yeah, and they've just struggled. And they've given up 15 touchdowns this year.
Yeah, and so their offense is bad. Their defense is porous. They can get after the quarterback a little bit. But the sack
numbers don't show it. They've got six in four games.
Yeah, but let's be honest, that is a concern coming off, like you said, a one sack performance by the Panthers that was, you know, but that led to Cliff or Kyler or Cliff and Kyler kind of peeing down their leg and getting a little protective. So that's obviously what the concern becomes for this, is that if the Jets somehow get ahead early, like the Panthers did, and like they did against the Broncos, let's be honest, and Kyler has a hiccup, that all of a sudden you're going to see a similar game plan devolve from Cliff Kingsbury, and that opens the door for anyone, because the one thing that the Jets do okay is run the football. It's not great by any means. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying like, oh, they're a great running football team. What I'm saying is, if you asked for what their strength is offensively, it's running the football. Some of that is Sam Darnold. He's actually ran the ball fairly well this year.
He's their second leading rusher right now, and his average over 8 yards an attempt. He's been Kyler Murray-like, but not in the same way. But he can get out and move. But here's the thing. According to Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News, while Darnold is doing his best to play, the Jets, as of right now, aren't planning on playing him. So it's going to be Joe Flacco. Elite Joe Flacco.
And honestly, if that happens and the Cardinals lose, I don't know how you can come back to Arizona at that point. And that's harsh to say, but I mean, you know that they're going to try to run the ball a lot. Their quarterback, their young quarterback's out. They don't pass block well. You know, they don't run. They're the worst pass block team in the NFL. Again, their defense is among the worst in the NFL. I mean, they're about equal with the Cardinals, but let's be honest, that's not hard right now. They don't tackle well at all, and they don't particularly play coverage all that well. So they can run the ball, and their run defense is not awful, which is, I mean, it's middling, but it's not awful. So they run the ball, they're top, you know, 12 rushing team, and they're top 14 against the run. I mean, this just sets up for what we've been waiting for all season, in kind of an explosive game from Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals offense. But again, they do rush. They do create a lot of pressure on the quarterback. And if that's happening on Sunday, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's good in the sense of maybe the Cardinals will respond better this week than they did last week.
Right. And Denver with Jeff Driskel and Brett Rippon managed to put up 37 points.
Right. Well, and again, you kind of said it. Like, they have allowed a ton of touchdowns. They don't score any touchdowns. I mean, their season total numbers are catastrophically bad. And that's, when you look at it from that perspective of things, you don't expect the Cardinals, and I hate saying this because it's a road game, but you don't expect the Cardinals to have problems with a team that only scores 16 points per game and gives up 33 points a game. I mean, 33 points a game is an absurd number, and the Cardinals we know what bad defense is. We saw last year the Cardinals defense was really bad and they only gave up 27.5 points per game. The Jets defense is literally giving up another touchdown. That's how bad they are. So I just,
well, again, and they don't, their receiving core, there's some, they don't have receivers. I mean, they don't have receivers. Jameson Crowder's not a terrible player.
No, but he's going to have over 100 yards receiving against the Cardinals.
And Breshad Perriman is a guy who statistically should be better, but never is.
Yeah.
and Chris Hogan, Chris Hogan's beaten the Cardinals before. We saw it when he was in New England. But
you're making me less excited about this game. Ever. Like, you're more nervous about this game in there. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you look at it, you just, there's not a statistical angle to come from unless the Cardinals get down early and just refuse to adjust to justify the Jets winning this game.
Yeah, this is a game that the Cardinals should take care of business, and if they take care, like, they get ahead early, it should be fine. Especially if Joe Flacco's playing now. I mean, I'll say what joke about the elite Joe Flacco. I love elite Joe Flacco jokes. He has been a very good quarterback in this league, and so there's something still there. Nonetheless, Joe Flacco needs weapons and needs a running game around him, and their running game is when there are no players other than Sam Arnold currently on the roster, who's had more than one carry, who's averaging more than 4 yards a carry outside of Sam Darnold. The other guy was Kalen Ballage, and they just cut him. And so Frank Gore at 3.2, LaMichael Perine, I don't know how you pronounce it, 3.7. You've got Josh Adams averaging 2.7. It's they don't make big plays in the run game. They don't have great talent at receiver, and they don't defend well. My goodness, this game should be in hand now. Prediction wise, do I expect a crazy blowout? No, because the Cardinals don't tend to do that when they're on the road, unfortunately.
Yeah, and for me, for a prediction, I'm with you. I haven't seen anything that says this team's ready to bust out yet, and so I think they win the game, but it's something like 23, 24 to 16 or 17. Like, it's a closer game than it should be. The Cardinals win, but the Jets lose and end up, dropping their points per game allowed.
Yeah. 24-13 is what I've got. 24-13. I think it'll be a a game in which the Cardinals win without a lot of competition, but it won't be one that they run away with. But that said, it's going to be going in the right direction, which is something the Cardinals badly need at this point. Just at least get in the right direction, get right, get into some rhythm, make some plays on defense, and to come away with a win to build on that before their big Monday night matchup against Dallas. Because Dallas, I mean, that's an important game right now. Like, as it is, the losses to the Panthers and the Lions are damaging losses because they're in the conference. If there was, if they had to lose one game of these three, I would prefer them to have lost the Jets game on the bigger picture. I know it looks worse, but because it's an AFC game, it doesn't count against them other than in actual wins. Their losses to the Panthers and to the Lions will hurt them in the wild card race aside from wins because of how tie breaks work. But that game against Dallas is something going to become important because while Dallas has a very exciting offense, they turn the ball over and their defense is just atrocious. Just atrocious. The Browns should have put up 70 points against them, honestly.
Yeah, they really should have. So it's, you know, and that's one of those games you don't, like I said, you're not expecting it to be close, but the way the Cardinals have played this year, I don't think you can justify picking anything other than this.
Correct. And with that, we will end this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. This is episode 281. We predict this Cardinals win, and I don't, maybe we'll be doing the show with bags over our heads if they lose to the Jets because the Jets are a dumpster fire. And then maybe we'll already be calling for the firing of everyone, even though we know it's not going to happen. But with that, thanks for listening to the show. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back. Go Cardinals. Hopefully they are 3-2 after this weekend. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.